from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's January the 15th, 2010. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Well, as I said, this is Harold Covington speaking. I know that that opening theme sounds a bit tinny and echoey, and that's because I'm not mixing it. I am simply playing it on my speakers. I actually bought new speakers for that very purpose, and while they sound better than the Walmart junk I had before, they still don't come up to scratch. Over the next couple of weeks, I will be learning some new software and hopefully learning how to do it right with a proper mix. Until then, I apologize for the sloppy sound effects. I also apologize for the sound of my voice. The lung crud seems to be setting in again, and I'm starting to get a little hoarse and nasal and sinusy, which may lead to my cutting this show a bit short if it gets to the point where I can't talk anymore. This is our first edition of Radio Free Northwest, and it's going to be kind of a test show just to give me some feeling of the logistics and the mechanics involved in getting out an hour-long show every week. I have some talking points scribbled out here in the form of a very general outline of what I want to cover, but no actual prepared speeches other than a few emails from people which I'll read out. I'm still not even completely sure on the hour-long part. It may be a better idea if I shorten this to 40 or 45 minutes, including one musical break. I'm sorry if this sounds like I'm running white people down, but we have to start facing some uncomfortable truths. And one such uncomfortable truth is that white Americans have a real problem with attention span. Our brains are engineered that way deliberately by the Jews from childhood. White kids these days are almost never compelled to read a block of type for content anymore. Instead, they watch movies, DVDs, television, computer screens, Game Boys, cell phone video cams, so forth and so on, and their brains become physically atrophied and lazy. White people have trouble processing content in their minds these days, and they need frequent changing stimulation of their cortexes by electronic images. And this is reflected in TV commercials. When I was growing up, it was by no means unusual to have a television ad that ran a full 60 seconds. By the time I was in my early 20s, the average television ad was only 30 seconds, and now, more often than not, it's down to 12 or 15 seconds apiece, according to Hulu.com, which times them, because white Americans simply can't concentrate, and their minds have to be stimulated with frequent changes of electronic impulse. This is why so many white men sit on the couch flipping the remote over and over and over again, stimulating their brains with a constant procession of changing electronic images. It's a form of addiction, just like booze and drugs, in that the brain is responding to artificial stimulus and needs more and more of it. True, some radio talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck can keep a show going for 3 hours, but they also have news breaks, they change the electronic stimulus frequently with ads and guest callers and musical breaks like Rush Limbaugh's Paul Shanklin parody songs, so forth and so on. Very seldom will Limbaugh, for example, go on an actual monologue that lasts longer than 10 or 12 minutes, and I think I need to adapt that here. So this first test program for Radio Free Northwest may not run a full hour. I'll have to see how that goes. I remember from back in the day when right-wing and racial leaders would communicate with their own people through using cassette tapes that they dropped in the mail. In fact, I was doing that myself as recently as 2 years ago. I think the Birch Society still does it, but these right-wing cassette tapes, some of them commercially produced, would just go on and on and on as some right-winger rabbited on endlessly about the insiders or the Federal Reserve or the World Jewish Conspiracy, mostly saying things that everybody already knew. And we were expected to sit in nice little rows in the rented motel banquet room or in somebody's living room and listen like little zombie robots to the voice of fearless leader droning on and on and on out of this cassette recorder. sometimes for hours at a time. I don't want this program to become something like that. I don't want you sitting there just listening to the droning sound of my voice until my larynx gets completely shot, it almost is now, and you zone out with boredom. So I will try to vary the show as much as possible. At first it will be with music, which hopefully won't sound as tinny once I learn some mixing software and I can do a proper mix. Anyway, speaking of droning on and on, I suppose I'd better get on with it. For the first-time listeners among you who are just tuning in and have no idea who the hell I am, I represent the Northwest Front, and we advocate the establishment of an all-white homeland in the Pacific Northwest where new generations of white children can be raised in both physical and moral safety and health. I'm also the author of the 4 Northwest Independence novels, which some of you may be familiar with, and if not, you can go to our party's website at www.northwestfront.org and learn more about them in a special section we have there. The Northwest Imperative is not new. I did not invent it, and I make no such claim. An independent white homeland in the Northwest was first advocated back in the 1970s by people like Pastor Bob Miles, Pastor Richard Butler, and of course the heroic freedom fighters of the order. Now, if you want to really get esoteric about it, you might say that we go all the way back to the early 1800s with the great conspiracy of Aaron Burr and General James Wilkinson to seize what was then the Louisiana Territory and make it into a new country separate from the United States. Well, wouldn't that have changed history, yeah? One of the great might-have-beens. Or you might say that the Northwest idea goes back to the 1940s, when the people of Northern California got so sick and tired of being essentially governed by corrupt politicians in Sacramento, who were responsive in those days only to the equally corrupt cities of Los Angeles and San Francisco and the Jewish Empire down in Hollywood, that the people of Northern California got together in the first secession convention since 1861. It was somewhere up around Eureka, I think. And they declared Northern California to be a separate state, which they called the State of Jefferson. I guess they figured if Washington had a state named after him, then so could Thomas Jefferson. They were on the verge of petitioning Congress to recognize them as a separate state when Pearl Harbor happened, and so that pretty much put pay to that, but the idea has been there for a long time. Now, the Northwest Independence Movement has one single overriding imperative. The world must change. The purpose of democracy is to prevent change. The purpose of revolution is to bring it about, and that is our purpose. I am not ruling out the possibility that one day the Northwest Front might run in elections, but it will only be to provide a legal format for revolutionary organizing. Specifically, the Northwest Movement is based on a number of principles, all of which I believe are demonstrably true if they're approached with an open mind. One of these is that the white race is faced with literal physical extinction, both here and in Europe. Establishment media now admit that white people will be a minority on this continent by the year 2050, and that doesn't even take into account the problem of the age of the white population at that time. The second basic principle of the Northwest Imperative is that the United States of America, in its present form, is doomed, and that the only way to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children is physical separation from the mud races, and this requires territory, land of our own, and a government of our own. This white homeland must be a sovereign and independent nation where no non-whites, no Jews, no homosexual perverts, and no bird-brained liberals are even allowed to live. All those people have to be completely removed from the political and social equation. And when people say to me, "Oh, Harold, you're a monster, you're cruel and mean and heartless," I tell them to go take a flying leap at a rolling donut. My eyes are on the prize, folks. I want the result. An all-white world where white children don't have to go through what we've had to go through in our lives. Yes, Virginia, sometimes the end does justify the means, and that is the case with white survival. The survival of the white race on earth is non-negotiable. The 14 words of David Lane are non-negotiable, and we need to start manning up and doing what is necessary to make sure that there are still some people with our color skin alive on this continent in another 100 years. You can't cure disease without dealing with germs and the infection they cause. Historically, human problems are very seldom caused by nature anymore. The Black Death wiped out 1/3 of Europe in the 14th century, but this isn't the 14th century anymore. Earthquakes in Haiti notwithstanding, the Western world has the science and technology now to beat famine and plague and to predict and deal with things like hurricanes and volcanoes and repair the damage they do when they occur. The white man does anyway. Black primitives in Haiti don't, but I'm not concerned with them. If global warming were real, which it's not, it wouldn't wipe us out because science, white man's science, I might add, would find a way to deal with it. No. In recent centuries, human problems have been caused mostly by people. And the only way to put a stop to some problems is to remove certain people from participation in the process. Now, that may sound cruel and cynical, but it's true. And if you look at human history, that's more often than not how mankind solves its problems. Through proactive human intervention that one way or another removes certain groups, nations, and races from the picture. That's just the way it is, and it's not going to change just because some people don't have the courage or the energy to do what is necessary to save white people from extinction. Now, there have been, and still are, some white separatists who think that we should do like the Amish and just buy some land somewhere out in the boondocks and go off and live in little log cabins and be on our own and to hell with the outside world. Well, unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. The establishment will not allow anyone to opt out of this system. Ask Randy Weaver. Ask the Branch Davidians. Ask those Mormon fundamentalists in Texas whose compound was raided last year and whose children have been taken away from them to be raised as brainwashed American consumer animals. It is impossible to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children without establishing our own territory, our own state, and our own government. It is impossible for white people ever to be truly free or even to survive as a race without confronting the Zionist state, without confronting the empowered Zionist and liberal ruling elite and removing them from power. They have the power, and if we are to survive, we cannot continue to try to escape and evade and hide. We must take their power away from them and appropriate it for ourselves. In the real world, that's how it works, and we have to start living in the real world. When a man is attacking you with a gun or another weapon in his hand and trying to kill you, you may survive for a bit by running away, but if you're in a cage, even a cage as big as the United States of America, and you can't flee out of his range, then eventually that armed killer will catch up with you and find you. When a man is attacking you with a weapon in his hand, you can't just turn your back on him and ignore him and pretend he doesn't exist, hoping that he'll concentrate his murderous intentions on somebody else and always pass you and your loved ones by. Tyranny needs victims. Human beings and human blood and suffering are the fodder on which tyranny feeds, whether the tyrant be Hammurabi or Genghis Khan or Stalin or Barack Hussein Obama. You might achieve survival for a time, if not peace, through silence and submission. The monster may not bother you for a while, if you're very quiet and don't attract his attention. But eventually he's going to notice you, and it will be your turn. All you accomplish by turning your back on him and pretending he doesn't exist is he'll shoot you in the back. In our society, the armed homicidal maniac with a gun who's coming to kill us is the United States government. If we do not disarm this crazy man, this insane beast, then it's going to kill us all and force our children to live in a world that doesn't bear thinking about. Now, at this point, I suppose I should ask you to bear in mind that there are distinct limitations on what I can say on the air here. We always need to bear in mind that the enemy is listening, He is listening to this show, and he is monitoring every email and every phone call we make. Even if this may not be literally true all the time, we have to act as though it is true. Like Winston Smith in the George Orwell novel 1984, we have to learn to live as if we are watched every moment of our lives, from our cell phones to our chat rooms to the spy cameras in shopping malls and office buildings, and of course on our computers. And then we have to learn the art of ignoring that fact and continuing to function in spite of it all, because we have to function. We dare not allow ourselves to become so terrified of FBI agents under the bed and microphones in the sugar bowl that we cannot function, because that's what they want. Constant government surveillance is a form of terrorism. The regime's secret police want us to be afraid to speak, afraid to communicate with one another, afraid to function. And we can't let them do that to us. We just need to develop a level of care about what we say that becomes almost instinctive. In keeping with that, I think we all realize that there are parameters to what I can say here. Very often, I will have to resort to what Lenin referred to as Aesopian language, the language of fable. I will have to follow the late Pastor Bob Miles's dictum, sorry about that, about never committing to paper anything you wouldn't want read out in open court. Or in this case, never saying anything on the air that I wouldn't want played back in open court, as someday no doubt it will be. If at times on this show I seem to be dancing around something, beating around the bush, or going around my elbow to get to my thumb in order to make a point, then you're just going to have to learn to read between the lines. Just remember what I said about that crazy man with the gun from Washington, D.C., who's coming to kill us all. You can't run away and hide from him forever, and you can't just pretend he doesn't exist. On his part, the man in the silk suit with his government-issued gun and badge and a shoulder holster can't be merciful. He can't just decide to let us alone any more than we can ignore him, because he has no will of his own, because it's not up to him. He has to do what the computer tells him to do, because he has sold his soul for a little computerized check of Federal Reserve dollars every month. And to be fair, also for medical and health insurance for his family, which is almost unobtainable now. Putting on that federal badge is a form of resignation from the human race. A federal agent made the decision long ago to trade his or her integrity, their free will, and their soul in exchange for the material benefits that the regime provides. And they have become so morally corrupted by what they do that they are no longer amenable to reason or human decency. A federal agent's entire reason for being, the reason he was brought into existence, is specifically to do us harm. Sooner or later, one way or the other, we're all going to have to deal with these people. And I think it's best that we do so acting together and with a plan. Okay, what say we take that music break now? Now, I have one request from way back from a guy who read The Hill of the Ravens and who had not the slightest idea what I was referring to when I adopted Irish rebel songs to the novel. And it may... I think a lot of people didn't get that because, of course, you don't have, being Americans, you don't have the background. It's been brought to my attention that, you know, many Americans actually have no idea at all what an Irish rebel song is, which isn't surprising. Now, for our British listeners, yes, I am fully aware of the fact that the Irish Republican Army are Marxists. I lived in Ireland for 5 years, and I was living in London in 1991 and 1992 during the bombing campaign there. And in my official capacity, I actually helped out on the scene immediately after the Baltic Exchange St. Mary Axe bombing in 92, and so I saw the results of that attack, so yes, I know whereof I speak. I believe that the white resistance movement can draw certain lessons and parallels from the IRA as revolutionaries without reference to their ideology, because let's face it, while they didn't win, the British didn't win either. Basically, the IRA, after 30 years, forced the Brits to buy them off and cocked a snook at Margaret Thatcher's ranting and raving about how she was going to crush them like cockroaches. Maggie Thatcher is a senile old biddy now, and Gerry Adams is sitting in Stormont drawing money from Maggie Thatcher's treasury. and that's a victory of a sort. Anyway, here's the original version of a song that I adapted to the Hill of the Ravens, and it's called The Boys of the Old Brigade. Some of you may remember in its adapted form from The Hill of the Ravens. Okay, here's another crux point in this first test show. And I apologize for my hacking here, but as I said, my lungs are starting to crud up again. I'm sorry about that. I'd hoped I'd gotten rid of that for this year, but apparently not. Anyway, this is the second half of the show where I throw away my talking points and go completely unscripted. I need to learn to do this totally ad-lib if necessary. You will probably hear an increase from this point on in and so forth. But I used to be pretty good at ad-libbing back in the day, and I need to recover the art, so I'm going to practice on you guys here. Also, during the second part, my voice is probably going to get even more hoarse than it is, and it'll be interesting to see how long I can talk before I just start croaking like a bird of ill omen. Anyway, over the past few days, I've asked people to send in questions for me to deal with on the show. We do not as yet have the technology to take live calls, and frankly, I am not sure we ever will, for several reasons which I won't get into now, or I don't know, should I keep that subject for later or not? Oh, well, what the hell, I'm supposed to be ranting and raving here, but normally I would include this in a character rave, but I listen to Rush Limbaugh and I listen to Glenn Beck, and they're very professional in their presentation. They're very cool about it. They make some good points that I can often use in one way or another, my movement-related, work, and okay, fine. I know they're neocons. I know they're Israel worshipers. I take that into account. But, you know, I think they're worth listening to. But when I am listening to these programs, when I turn off the sound for a bit is when those idiot callers start ringing up. Now, I know that's their draw. They've got to, you know, let the people have their say. The trouble is the people are mostly idiots. And I'm not being, you know, arrogant or elitist or anything like that. I mean, I think most of you listening here know exactly what I'm talking about. Entirely too many of our racial compatriots in this country have, you know, nothing but pork fat between their ears. And the movement is also especially susceptible to certain character-related problems, as some of you know. I'm not going to get into that because I've made the decision that this show is not going to be a forum for that kind of silliness, but that does not include occasional discussions of the issue of character. We have a character problem in the movement. I'm not going to overemphasize it, but I've got to recognize its existence, and for that reason, I think it's probably best that I do not start taking live calls until such time as I've worked out the technology to have a, you know, a 14-second cutoff or whatever is necessary, because, I mean, I've heard some right-wing shows, right-wing racial shows on internet radio that some of the callers were obviously Jewish trolls just looking to stir trouble. And, you know, if I've got an hour to talk to you, I'm not going to waste time on a Jew. As far as I'm concerned, Jews and niggers and those people have got nothing to say. I have nothing to say to them, and they are just, you know, they are not part of this show. I'm not going to allow them to be a part of this show. And I'm not going to waste time on a situation where they might call up and start babbling into a microphone and wasting our time. So that's one thing. Also, we have some problematic people in the movement who, in my opinion, need to, as they say in Alcoholics Anonymous, take the cotton out of their ears and put it in their mouth. And, you know, yes, Virginia, there is such a thing as a stupid question. And I'm sorry, if this sounds arrogant or whatever, but if I've got only an hour here to talk to my people directly, I'm not going to waste time on idiots. So that's another reason I'm going to be very leery about the call situation. But eventually, hopefully, we'll get on a proper network. There seems to be a problem with certain of the internet radio networks right now that they're cracking down on us nasty old radicals, but you know, I'll work all that out later. Right now, I'll just be happy if I can do a proper podcast with a proper mix and not, you know, sound like I'm Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven croaking nevermore. Okay, anyway, I got a number of emails from people who wanted me to do news analysis. Now, news analysis has always been the pablum of the right wing. I know some fearless leaders who have based their entire careers on doing nothing but basically recycling and picking to pieces mainstream media news articles without ever once offering a solution to any of the crisis-related problems other than write your congressman. So, here's the first email. Dear Harold, what do you think about the earthquake in Haiti? And that's from Charles in Florida. Well, what do you mean what I think about it? They're niggers. And they're not even on this continent. It's got nothing to do with us. I heard Limbaugh today talking about how the liberals are praising Obongo for rushing American aid to Haiti in contrast with Bush's supposed tardiness and apathy in New Orleans after Katrina. Nobody even seems to be mentioning that Haiti is a foreign country and that our own country is damn near bankrupt and the military is stretched thin to the point of collapse due to these two stupid Jewish wars that have been going on in the Muslim lands for 8 years now. And what in God's name are we doing sending these creatures in Haiti one thin dime? Well, of course, we all know what we're doing there. It's Obongo and his Jewish and liberal friends being compassionate to foreigners because they have black skins, while American families with white skins are starting to live in tent cities called Obamavilles. And, by the way, now that I think about it, this might be a good time to get in real quickly into something I've dealt with in a fireside chat. Yes, I say nigger. I say kike. I, you know, say monkey meat. I say a lot of things. I do not allow the enemy to set the parameters of my discussion. I do not allow the enemy to set the parameters of my thought. I do not allow political correctness to dictate to me what terminology I will use regarding what or who. This type of thing that has set in, and I'm ashamed to say that I know certain popular racial websites who refuse to allow the word nigger on there now. You got to say black guy. No, he's not a black guy. He is a nigger. He is a creature on a lower stage of evolution than a white person. To use the term black guy implies a state of equality which does not exist. And that is why they insist we use it. That's why that we are being forced to think before we speak because of the terrible retaliation if we say nigger or coon or jigaboo, whatever like that, because it's a form of thought control by, you know, engaging in, you know, serious economic retaliation for a word. And yes, one word can end your career. Ask Mark Furman. Harry Reid got away with it, but Harry Reid is a Democrat. Trent Lott made a mildly racial reference to the Dixiecrats, and he was run out of the Senate. They can't allow anybody to say these things because they don't want anyone thinking them. And they know if they make people so afraid that they might accidentally let the word slip and destroy their lives, and at least destroy themselves financially, that people will become so frightened that they will school themselves not even to think it. So that we no longer have even a vocabulary of language in which to express thoughts of resistance. I won't allow that. Now, I don't expect anybody to, you know, running down the street yelling nigger, 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 nigger at the top of their lungs like J.B. Stoner. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, I am practical. I understand that people have jobs and families and homes to protect. I don't expect anyone to throw those things away arbitrarily. But for God's sake, people, among ourselves, we're afraid to say nigger? No, 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 no. Well, I mean, it's, you know, this has got to stop, and so I'm going to stop it right here. I'm going to say nigger when I damn well feel like saying nigger. Anyway, all right, let's get back to the emails. Dear Harold, for the first show, I'd stick with how and why we are doing what we're doing, presenting our case in a way that the average white person in America or elsewhere can relate. I know that much of this is already available on the web, so maybe sharing personal experiences that many other whites wouldn't like to openly admit they've had themselves would do some good. Humanizing our cause, so to speak, or at least making it personal to whites who recognize the terminal state that this country is in, but are not sure of a direction to take. Anyway, that's just off the top of my head for an opening show. Good luck, Chris from Detroit. And again, I apologize for my voice. I probably should have held this off until tomorrow, or at least until my voice clears up, but I did promise you people something before the end of the week, so this will have to do. Okay. Thanks for the email, Chris. Eventually, when I learn the technology better and I can actually do this show as an audio mix rather than babble directly into a mic and play music on my speakers, I think I'll be able to broaden things a little bit beyond the soul sound of my own voice. I'll be able to patch in audio files from other people, do things like playing the heckling phone messages that our Portland unit gets on their machine and that kind of thing. I want this to be not just a monologue. On the one hand, I do, you know, like I say, I'm leery of taking calls from people who I don't know and who might say, you know, dumb things or force me to address or try to force me to address things that don't need to be addressed in public. And I'm sure those of you who are familiar with my situation within the movement can, you know, imagine what I'm talking about. There are people who don't need to be on here, who have nothing to say, and who have no right to be on here, and I'm not letting them on. But on the other hand, I don't want to give the impression that I'm afraid to address any issue. I'm not, if it's done right, and I don't want this to be just, you know, me raving, but I want to use this hour or so of time in a constructive manner to make necessary points. When we can get a proper studio set up, which is another thing that we are going to have someday soon, an actual proper internet radio studio that I can actually get a guest in here physically at my side. And we're no longer playing this game of doing things and sending it all over the world by internet and having somebody do something here and somebody do something there because everybody's too lazy or too scared or too apathetic to get their asses up and move. In other words, we're all living within half an hour's drive of each other, or the ones that we need are living within half an hour's drive of each other. We've got an actual staff, we've got a building, we've got people who are taking this seriously, and we've got a proper studio. Then we can have a full-blown, proper Rush Limbaugh-style radio show. I can have guests, I can take calls, I can, you know, run an email chat while, you know, we're going. We can do all of these things. But we have to learn to crawl before we can walk and walk before we can run. Okay, and did that make any sense? I don't know, I'm just babbling. Okay, now, another email here. How about the top 10 reasons why the Holocaust didn't happen? Cover the basics like you were doing a late-night talk show monologue, or the negative implications of miscegenation based on biological findings as opposed to social acceptance. Another possibility would be, for those who have not yet read your novels, the strategic importance of the Pacific Northwest with regards to self-sufficiency. Signed, Jason from Illinois. Okay, yeah, I can do a show on the basics of Holocaust revisionism, sure, but you need to bear in mind that we are not primarily revisionists. We're quite separatists. Now, Holocaust revisionism is important, certainly, because it undermines and strikes at the very moral foundation of the Jewish world order. Now, this bogus idea that the wicked Nazis gassed 6 million Jews and therefore Palestine has to be taken away from its native inhabitants and given by force to the Kikes, but history and academic stuff isn't really what we're about in the Northwest Front. There are many brilliant revisionists on the internet and elsewhere who state a case for the Holocaust being a hoax far better than I ever can. And so probably the best thing we can do along that line is to try and get people to go to a certain, you know, revisionist websites. But yeah, if you want, I'll see if I can work up a Radio Free Northwest that takes a crack at it once for the record. Keep on reminding me by email, Jason, and don't let me slack off and go senile on you and forget, and we'll give it a try someday soon. Okay, now, I am now about 40 minutes in. My voice is shot. I don't know if I can do any more major topics because I'm about to, I feel like I'm talking with a gravel pit in my mouth. Part of this, I suppose, is my fault because I'm not very socialized. I don't actually talk much on a day-to-day basis because there's nobody around who's worth talking to, with rare exceptions of my comrades in the area here. And so I'm not really that up to it like I used to be. I used to be, among other things, a newscaster and announcer on several pirate radio stations in Dublin. But, of course, in those days I was a lot younger, my voice was a lot fitter, and I wasn't in, you know, such crummy health, so I need to start recovering some of the skills and whatnot that I had during those days and also during my days as an actor, but that's going to take a while. So please forgive the, you know, generally CD quality of this first test show and probably the CD quality of the next couple to come, because I'm going to be diddling with software and probably going to have to change my whole method of recording the show and so forth and so on. This is still experimental. I am still, you know, looking for angles and still looking for ways to do a proper one-hour show. I'm probably going to have to sign off now fairly early, because, like I say, my voice right now is just shot. I've just gotten too hoarse. I'm just not used to talking this much. But then again, maybe it would be a good thing if the show only went for 45 minutes. That's another thing you guys can email me about. Now, and again, I'm not joking. I'm not trying to pick on you. I'm not ragging on you. But do you have the attention span to listen to 45 minutes of a radio show like this if it doesn't have frequent breaks and changes of viewpoint and ads and music and that sort of stuff? In other words, can you sit down, turn on your computer, and just listen for 45 minutes or an hour and absorb what I'm saying. And that may or may not be possible. I don't know. How badly has the American attention span and the American mind and the American ability to concentrate been damaged by years of television? I don't know. So that's one thing we need to find out. And like I say, I'm not picking on anybody. I'm not trying to, you know, be spiteful or anything, but this is a real problem that we have to deal with. I think that's a large part of our whole problem. We have to understand that our people, white people, as a whole, are pretty much damaged goods. I used to think that all this BS we get in the movement, all the goat dancing and the goo-boo and the, you know, tubby-tubby-tubby and the silly websites and the silly little lawsuits and the stupid crap on VNN and all that sort of stuff and the, you know, the feces on my doorstep and all this sort of stuff. I used to think this was just the movement. But I've come to the conclusion over the years that it's not. It's a white thing. This is one of our big problems. White people as a whole are just damaged goods. They're dysfunctional. Their families and social and economic life is dysfunctional and confused. They don't have any application. They don't have any concentration. They, you know, the average American white person, even if he's fairly successful, is a mile wide and an inch deep. So that is a factor that we have to take into consideration when we're doing a show that's supposed to bring white people around to a specific political point of view. Anyway, okay, I'm about to run down here. And so, again, I would like to do this every week. And I'm actually dealing with my computer here to see if I can... Oh, okay, there we go. All right. Like I said, I'm still experimenting with all this stuff here. Okay, anyway, I will try to get this out roughly once a week. And I want you to email me with your reactions to what you've heard here tonight. I want you to email me with suggestions. And, you know, if there's something about that you just plain don't like, that's fine. I can probably fix it. I think a lot of these problems will be fixed once I, you know, start doing a proper mix and I can learn some new software. I admit it. I am an old dog, and it's very hard to teach me new tricks. A while back, one of my people sent me a MP3 player. I still haven't learned how to use it. That was over a year ago. Because I went to the site and I couldn't figure out how to use the software. I didn't know the, you know, terminology. How do you rip something? I have no idea. And so, you know, I went back to my old cassettes. So, you know, I think that's probably something that happens with a lot of my the people of my generation. We just, you know, I guess old people all the time, we just don't like these changes, and we like to do things our old way. But I am capable of learning, so hopefully I'll be able to learn enough of this software and remember enough of my old media skills to get you guys a fairly decent show every week. And I think right now I'd better stop babbling and shut up. So, guys, again, let me know what you think, and we'll talk to you later. That's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4586, Seattle, Washington, 98104. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. I'll sign off with the one word that tells you what it's all about. Freedom.